Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling that inevitable crossroads that so many IT leaders find themselves at. It's that moment when your trusty, dedicated VMware infrastructure just can't keep up anymore.
It really is an inflection point, and it usually shows up in one of two ways. Either you're looking at just an astronomical bill for a hardware refresh, which is a huge capital expense, or your business is actually being held back because your infrastructure can't scale. So the real question becomes, what's the smartest, you know, the lowest risk way to get from the world, you know, VMware to the promise of the cloud, specifically Azure?
Exactly. And the source material for this deep dive is a really solid guide on building a seamless VMware to Azure migration and modernization strategy.
Huh.
We're not just, you know, reading a manual here. We're pulling out the core methodologies, the frameworks, and the real-world strategies that let you do this without a massive operational meltdown.
Right. And our mission today is really to give you that critical knowledge. This isn't just about moving some servers around. It's about unlocking what Azure can really do. Things like top-tier disaster recovery, true elastic scale.
Right.
But, and this is the key point, doing it while preserving all that expertise your team has already built in VMware. It's all about future-proofing without forcing your people to relearn everything from scratch overnight.
Okay, let's unpack this a bit. So we talked about that inflection point. You mentioned hardware hitting its end of life, scalability limits. What are some of the other maybe external pressures that really force an organization's hand?
Well, beyond that big CapEx hit, the sources point to data center lease expirations as a massive driver. All of a sudden, you have a hard deadline. You have to be out. The other big one is just, you know, geographic necessity. If you need true instant redundancy for disaster recovery, trying to run multiple physical data centers yourself gets incredibly expensive very fast.
And that's where the whole financial model flips. That shift you mentioned from CapEx to OpEx, that alone has to change the entire conversation in the finance department.
It completely changes the budgeting conversation, yes.
Eh.
But the real strategic insight here, the thing the guide emphasizes, is that you don't have to abandon what you know. This is where Azure VMware Solution, or AVS, comes in as a kind of a strategic bridge. The idea is simple, really. You run your native VMware workloads, your vSphere, VSAN, NSX, directly inside Azure's environment.
Okay, that sounds almost too easy. If AVS is running the native stack, what control are you giving up? I mean, Microsoft is managing the bare metal now. Where's the trade-off?
That's a great question, because there is one. You lose control of the physical layer. Microsoft handles the dedicated bare metal servers in their data center. So the hardware lifecycle, patching the host, all that underlying stuff, that's on them. But you keep full administrative access to your vCenter server. Your team is still managing VMs, storage policies, network configs, just like they always have.
So the day-to-day operations, the interface, it all feels the same, but the physical problems are gone.
Precisely. And that integration is everything. Because AVS lives inside Azure, you get these high-speed, low-latency connections to all the native Azure services, things like Azure SQL, Azure Active Directory, Azure Monitor. It's all right there on the Azure backbone. It's modernization through integration, not by, you know, ripping and replacing everything.
And that combinationless capital spending, better DR because of the global regions, and that elastic scale for peak demand, that really forms the core business case. So before anyone even thinks about moving a single workload, the guidance is really clear on this. Success starts with a super rigorous, comprehensive assessment. If you skimp on this discovery phase, you are just setting yourself up for some nasty surprises. What does that checklist actually look like?
Yeah, we call it the discovery phase, and it's probably the single best investment of time you can make in the whole project. It's what stops scope creep and, you know, prevents major sizing errors down the line.
Okay, so let's walk through it. What's number one?
First up is the virtual machine catalog. You have to document everything, the OS, the app, its dependencies. But critically, you need real performance baselines, not just average CPU use, but peak use for CPU, memory, and especially disk IOPS. You have to know the peak IOPS, because if you undersize that in Azure, your application will just fall over.
That's the classic mistake. Sizing for the quiet times, not the Black Friday sale.
Exactly. And a huge side benefit here is that a lot of organizations, maybe 40 or 50%, find all this obsolete or redundant stuff. Digital dead weight they can just turn off before they move, which saves money right away.
A little digital spring cleaning. So what's next after the VMs?
Second is storage architecture. You need to analyze your vSIM data stores, your VMFS setups. You have to map the performance profile of your storage to the right Azure disk tier. You know, standard SSD, premium SSD, ultra disk. A mismatch here is a huge point of failure. Third is the network topology. This means mapping every distributed switch, every VLAN, every single security policy. This becomes the literal blueprint for building your Azure virtual networks.
And I'm guessing the fourth one, application dependencies, is where the biggest risk of an outage lies if you get it wrong.
It is the absolute outage factor. You have to find all the inter-VM communication, the clustering, database replication. If you move VMA, but not VMB that it talks to constantly, you've just created an outage.
Yeah.
The whole sequence of your migration depends on getting that dependency map right.
And finally, the less glamorous but totally essential stuff.
Right. Licensing and compliance. You have to do a full review. APA, PCI, DSS, whatever applies to you. And it's important to check your Microsoft licenses, too, because some can move to the cloud with you. But the good news is AVS actually bundles the vSphere licensing, which simplifies things a lot.
Okay, so planning's done. Dependencies are mapped. The network is designed. Now you actually have to move things. The sources really emphasize that you don't just pick one way to do it. You combine different methods. So what are the different roads you can take here?
This is where it gets really interesting. Yeah, there are three main approaches, and you almost always use them in combination.
Let's start with the path of least resistance. What's the easiest on-ramp?
That would be approach one, rehosting with AVS. This is your pure lift and shift.
Mm-hmm.
It's perfect for those big production VMs where you just can't touch the application code, or for systems that really depend on VMware features like vMotion.
So how do you actually do that without downtime, especially for a live production system?
The key is a tool called VMware HCX, or Hybrid Cloud Extension. It's the magic that makes it seamless. It can do a live vMotion, so zero downtime, and it also does something called network extension. This means the VM keeps its original IP address when it lands in Azure. No reconfiguration nightmare. This is the fastest way. We're talking days or weeks.
Okay, so that's the fast path. What's the next step up, the one that starts to optimize things?
That's approach two, replatforming to Azure Native Services. Or you could call it optimize and shift. This is for workloads that can handle some small changes and would really benefit from Azure's own features. Here, you're actually moving the workload off the VMware stack completely and onto standard Azure virtual machines.
So you're swapping out VMware features for Azure equivalents.
Precisely. You'd replace a vSphere HA cluster with Azure Availability Zones, or an NSX load balancer with the Azure Load Balancer. We use a tool called Azure Site Recovery, ASR, for the replication here. The big win is you reduce your VMware licensing footprint, and you get instant access to things like automatic OS patching and native Azure backup.
Which brings us to the third most ambitious approach.
Right. Approach three. Refactoring for cloud-native architecture. This is a full redesign. You only do this for your most strategic applications, the ones that need massive elasticity and that pay-per-use model. You're breaking down old monolithic apps into microservices running on Azure Kubernetes Service, APS,
yeah.
Or maybe using serverless with Azure Functions.
That sounds like a ton of development work.
Oh, it is. It's the longest approach by far. It demands a lot of dev effort, which is why, in reality, the vast majority of successful projects use a hybrid approach with a staged migration. You start small. Move your disaster recovery to AVS first, then maybe your dev and test environments to native Azure VMs. You build confidence and you learn before you ever touch your critical production systems.
Let's dig into a really practical use case for a minute.
Yeah.
Desktop virtualization. So many companies rely on VMware Horizon for VDI. How does that fit into this hybrid Azure model?
It's actually a really powerful integration. Horizon Cloud on Azure lets you stretch your desktop virtualization right into the cloud. It's perfect for a hybrid workforce. Your management infrastructure, you know, the connection servers and so on, they can run on either Azure VMs or on an AVS cluster.
And I'm guessing the big difference compared to running it all on-prem is that capacity elasticity, right?
Absolutely. Think about a company with huge seasonal peaks, like a tax prep company or a university during enrollment. On-prem, you have to buy enough hardware for that six-week peak, and then it just sits there idle most of the year. In Azure, you can spin up thousands of desktops with instant clones for that peak and then just deprovision them when it's over. You're not paying to own all that idle capacity.
Which makes that CapEx to OpEx story for VDI just incredibly compelling.
It really does. And it's also a fantastic DR solution for your desktops. If your main data center goes down, you can use Azure Site Recovery to fail over your entire Horizon environment to Azure in just minutes. Your workforce is back online almost instantly. It's a game changer.
Okay, shifting gears to security. A migration project means data is in motion, new endpoints are being exposed, security can't be an afterthought.
No, it has to be foundational. And you start with the basics. Data protection. That means encryption in transit. All your HCX and ASR traffic needs to be TLS 1.2 at a minimum. Encryption at rest is easy. Azure Storage handles that automatically. Then for network security, you have to use private connectivity. That means an express route circuit or a site-to-site VPN. You don't move this data over the public internet.
And how do you handle identity? You've got your old on-prem world and this new Azure world.
You have to unify it. You synchronize your on-premises Active Directory to Azure AD. Then you lock it down with the principle of least privilege using Azure Role-Based Access Control, or RBAC. And for your admins, the ones with the keys to the kingdom, you absolutely have to implement Privileged Identity Management, or PIM.
PI is one of those acronyms that gets thrown around a lot. Can you break down why it's so important here?
PIM completely flips the script on admin access. Instead of an administrator having permanent admin rights that can be stolen, PIM makes them request access. And that access is temporary, it's time-bound, say for 2 hours, and then it just expires. It dramatically shrinks the window of vulnerability. It turns that dangerous standing access into safe, just-in-time access.
Okay, so we've covered the strategy, the tools, the security. Let's talk about the pitfalls. When a migration project goes off the rails or way over budget, where did things usually go wrong?
The sources are pretty clear on this. There are two main culprits that derail projects. First is application performance degradation after you've moved.
Oof, that's got to be demoralizing. Why does that happen? The app was running fine on-prem.
It's that classic mistake of undersizing the VM in the cloud. People look at the average usage, not the peak. If your payroll system spikes to 95% CPU every Friday, you have to size for that spike. If you size for the 30% average, that app is going to crawl to a halt every Friday. The other big reason is a storage mismatch, putting a high transacting database on a slow disk tier. The solution is just being rigorous about right-sizing based on those peak numbers you gathered in phase one.
And what's the second major challenge that leads to delays and cost overruns?
Extended migration timelines.
Mm-hmm.
The project just drags on and on. This is almost always because the team skimped on the upfront planning. They rushed the assessment, or they didn't provision enough bandwidth, you know, trying to push terabytes of data over a slow VPN connection. And the worst one of all is scope creep.
So how do you get ahead of that timeline problem?
You have to invest that time in discovery. There are no shortcuts. Second, you provision your dedicated bandwidth, like an express route circuit, early in the project. And third, and this is maybe the most important, you freeze the migration scope. If a new requirement comes up halfway through moving a set of apps, you add it to the next wave. You do not change the plan mid-flight.
Okay, so with all that in mind, what's a realistic timeline for a large environment?
You should plan for 6 to 12 months, and it breaks down into 5 phases. Phase 1 is assessment and planning. That's about 4 to 8 weeks. That's your design, your TCO analysis. Phase 2 is environment prep, 2 to 4 weeks. This is setting up Azure, getting the express route lit up, building your security rules.
And then the actual moves begin.
Yep. Phase 3 is a pilot migration, another 2 to 4 weeks. You move some non-critical VMs to test everything. Phase 4 is the production migration waves. This part varies, but you're moving small batches of applications, maybe 10 or 20 VMs at a time, usually over a weekend.
And what's the final crucial wrap-up stage?
Phase 5, optimization and handoff. This is 2 to 4 weeks after the migration. This is where you fine-tune everything, maybe shrink some VMs that are now oversized, and really focus on cost optimization with things like reserved instances. You finalize the documentation for your ops team. This is the phase that makes sure the project actually delivers on its promises.
So what does this all mean? I think the big takeaway here is that while moving to Azure brings these huge benefits, elastic scale, better DR, better costs, the Azure VMware solution is really that essential strategic bridge. It lets your IT teams use the valuable skills they already have in VMware. It takes away the pain and the risk of having to redesign everything on day one. It lets you buy yourself some time.
That preservation of expertise is so critical. And while AVS gives you that smooth on-ramp, you can't just stop there. And I guess that's the final thought I'd leave you with. Even if you lift and shift everything to AVS today, your job isn't done. You should constantly be looking for which specific applications are the most complex or costly to manage and earmarking those for that refactoring process later. Because the real long-term power of the cloud is unlocked when you start to truly adopt serverless and containers for your most important apps. The migration is just the beginning of the journey.